You're listening to Let's Talk on Talk Radio Europe. Now, the CIA is an interesting subject. They are looking basically for walking contradictions. Recruiters will seek out potential agents who can keep a secret, yet pull classified information out of others. People who love their country, but are willing to leave it behind for dangerous places. People who live double lives, but can be trusted with some of the nation's most highly sensitive tasks. Michelle Rigby-Assad was one of those people, and she has now written a book about it called Breaking Cover, My Secret Life in the CIA and What It Taught Me About What's Worth Fighting For. Interesting title, firstly. Welcome to the show, Michelle.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate you having me.
I first must ask you, I guess, for the benefit of myself and our listeners, how do you end up being in the CIA? You came from Florida. You were described as an isolated Florida girl. How do you become a CIA operative?
I know, that's the golden question. So I never dreamed of being in the CIA. I had no idea growing up that that was even a job. but I was really passionate about foreign cultures. And so I decided to just pursue that passion, and I even let it take me to places that scared me a little bit, but I did mission trips, study abroad programs, and then eventually it took me to Georgetown University to get a master's degree in Arab studies, and that's where I ended up getting recruited.
Okay, and the interesting thing, particularly interesting thing about you is that you ended up, of course, working alongside your husband.
Yes, sir. I know, highly unusual.
Yeah, very unusual. But you were both Arab specialists. So I guess for the CIA, they kind of got two for the price of one, did they?
They sure did. Yeah, it was a good deal for them. And the fact that we were willing to go pretty much where others weren't was also useful.
Is that, even if there were a kind of husband and wife team, is it normal you would do the same things at the same time? Or would you be sent off to different places around the world?
It's really hard. You know, what's useful for us is the fact that we had the same expertise. So there's no reason not to send us to the same places.
Yeah.
So, yeah, exactly. So it's not like, you know, one knew China really well and the other one knew Russia. So
right.
We had the same, yeah, exact same focus. And, it was easy to just to send us to like the war zone, like Baghdad, because we sold two slots. So for them, it worked out quite well.
Do you remember, thinking back, Michelle, the first time you walked into the CIA building? I guess it was probably a really quite intimidating moment, wasn't it?
So intimidating. Because it's not like I knew anyone who worked in the CIA, or I knew what this job was going to entail. So I was completely intimidated. And, you know, I walked in there, and I realized very quickly that I looked and acted very differently than the people in operations and management. And so I had this thought to myself, well, you know, I know you've always been overachiever, but it looks like you've met your match and you'll just be lucky enough to be average, I think, here in the CIA.
And I guess, I mean, I've never been there, but I guess it was generally what older white men that would be there, would it?
Correct. That's correct. Yeah. Unfortunately, the CIA, and as probably many intelligence agencies in the world, are disadvantaged by a lack of diversity in their ranks.
Yeah. I've heard you describe them as truculent.
Yeah. So, you know, it's one thing to not have, you know, racial or a cultural diversity, but I think the worst part was just that a lot of the people in senior positions were just very difficult to deal with. They didn't have friendly personalities. They weren't, you know, good with their staff members. And so it was a very strange and difficult place to work. And I thought, well, geez, I'm friendly. I like people. I love interacting with people and using my empathy in the job place. And it just didn't seem like that would go together at all.
And of course, us in like Brits particularly, when we think of the CIA, we probably think that you are effectively a female James Bond, but I don't think it's quite that glamorous, is it?
It's never as glamorous as you think it is, right? But, you know, I think what's so fun about the job is the whole psychology of it. So you're not shooting guns most of the time, and you're not driving fast cars, you know, like James Bond in London, but... what is so fascinating is the idea of interacting with another human being, like a terrorist source who is so different from you,
yeah,
and finding a way to make a connection with a radical ideologue who doesn't want to trust you, who doesn't want to give everything up, and see how do I use my interpersonal skills to make a connection with him, make him trust me, and then give me the secrets I need to stop terrorist attacks from occurring.
That's interesting, isn't it? I mean, what does actually motivate them then to cooperate with the CIA?
It's so fascinating because it's a variety of motivations. So for some, it's money. Some, it's ego, and they think that working with the CIA affords them some sort of protection. Some of them are double agents. Mm. And then some of them would just want to take out the competition. So I tell people, it really doesn't matter what the motivation, as long as you know what it is and you can play to it.
Right, got it. And I guess you're kind of living almost in a constant state of readiness, almost like a fighter pilot who is waiting for the call saying, you need to be here now.
Right, yes. And you're on all the time, especially in a war zone or, you know, difficult places like that, because threats come up. We're getting shelled at many of those locations. So in Afghanistan or Iraq, you're dealing with that issue. So it's not like, well, you know, today I'm kind of tired and I'll just push this over to the side and do it tomorrow. It's kind of life or death situations that have to be done as soon as they occur. So in that sense, it's a very difficult job because you're working weekends and holidays and you don't see your family for long periods of time. That's hard.
And I would guess that you're bombarded almost while you're working with just negativity.
Yes. Oh my goodness, yes. And that can be very tough to deal with. You're living in a world where it's all about attacks and torture and death, and it's very heavy. It's very heavy, and it wears on you, which is why after 10 years of that, my husband and I were ready for something new and different.
Absolutely. I've learned a couple of phrases from the book, which I wanted to ask you about. What is imposter syndrome? You had to overcome a strong case of imposter syndrome while working at the CIA.
Right. So the idea is that you aren't really sure what you're doing there. So you feel like you got hired for all the wrong reasons.
Welcome to my career, Michelle. Welcome to my career.
Did you feel that as well?
Always.
You know, yeah. And so you often don't even know what your own strengths are. So you spend a lot of time worrying that you're not good enough or that, you know, I'm pretending to be a CIA officer, but I really have no idea what I'm doing. And then, of course, it takes years in order to build up your skill set. And to realize that, you know, not only are you good enough, but you're actually really good at what you do. And so when you can make that leap finally in your own mind and you can have confidence in yourself, that's such a great place to arrive at.
Absolutely. Well, before you kind of finished up, you basically saved quite a lot of people in a mission that you're only just really able to talk about now in the book. Can you give us a brief synopsis of that?
Sure. So in 2015, this is after my husband and I left the CIA, there were a group of Americans that were trying to figure out how to help persecuted Christians in Syria and Iraq. I know there were also a lot of similar efforts going on in the UK as well. Because we had been hearing from a lot of them who were chased out of their ancient villages by ISIS, that some of them wanted to try to stay in the Middle East and others just said, we can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
And so we were brought in to try to figure out a country that would be willing to take some persecuted Christians. It was a huge and daunting task because Europe were just inundated with migrants over the summer of 2015.
Sure.
And I mean, it's not like, well, you want to talk about taking more migrants? I mean, who wants to do that, right? Mm. You already don't know what to do with all the people arriving on your shores.
Yeah.
So it was quite a miracle when we were able to arrange for Slovakia, who actually said yes to our request. And miraculously in December 2015, we airlifted 149 Iraqi Christians out of northern Iraq to their new homes in Slovakia.
Wow. Wow. Do you think that really was what the plan was for you? You know, the CIA thing had to happen before you were able to be put in that position.
Absolutely. You know, the skill set that's very unique, understanding diplomacy. How do you deal with foreign governments? And even more important than that, how do you work within a bureaucracy, working, in the CIA in the United States, help prepared us to know how to work with the Slovak bureaucracy, to work that within their own systems, which was a fascinating process. And then to work the whole aspect of Christian relations between the Vatican, because we had to get their approval before we conducted this operation. And so there was a lot of diplomacy that, we used, that we learned, and really could have only known through the CIA, as well as vetting the people that we were bringing over. The last thing that we wanted to do is bring over anybody who could be pose a security threat to the receiving country.
Right.
Yeah.
And here you are now. If they came back to you tomorrow on bended knee and said, please, Michelle, come back and work for us, would you do it?
We would have a very, the CIA?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Well, they wouldn't, number one. It's too late. I'm out. The cover is broken.
Right.
But in terms of serving my government in whatever way possible, of course, you always want to do things to help your community, help your government, help the world in general. So, yeah, my heart is soft in that regard. Whatever I can do to be of assistance on a security level, that is very exciting to me.
And I've got to ask you this. What happens when you leave the CIA? Do they give you a gold clock that you can take home with you with your name engraved on it?
If only. No watch, no clock, and even no bragging rights at first,
Of course. Oh, dear. Wonderful. Well, the book is a great book, and it tells you, as it says in the title, about what's worth fighting for. There is a kind of really interesting backstory. It's called Breaking Cover. Michelle Rigby Assad, thank you so much for joining us today. Appreciate your time, and good luck for your future career.
Thank you, Bill.